Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, John Kaminsky, and this morning's conversation is with Chris Mim, Managing Director, Strategic Issues at the Government Accountability Office. Chris, GAO's at a crossroads of sorts these days. David Walker, who served as the Comptroller General of the United States and head of the GAO for almost a decade, just left a little earlier this year. And now there's a need to select a new Comptroller General. Chris, could you give us an overview of the selection process for Comptroller General? And what are the critical elements of the selection process, and who's involved in this process?
The process for selecting the Comptroller General was established by the GAO Act of 1980. And then under the Act, the Comptroller General is appointed by the President with advice and consent of the Senate. When a vacancy occurs in for the CG, Congress establishes a commission to recommend individuals to the President. In this case, the commission consists of the Speaker of the House, the President Pro Tem of the Senate, the majority and minority leaders of the House and of the Senate, and then the chairman and ranking members of our two authorizing committees, which would be the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs and the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they get together and they must recommend at least three individuals to the president. The president may request that the commission recommend additional individuals. However, the president then selects an individual from those recommended by this congressional commission to be Comptroller General. The president's nomination must then be confirmed by the Senate, and so it kind of begins with the Congress, goes to the president for selection, and then goes back to the Senate for confirmation. And as you mentioned, it's a 15-year non-renewable term. You mentioned we're at a crossroads. I mean, we were obviously extremely fortunate that Dave Walker was the Comptroller General for the 9.5 years he's since left, obviously, to head the Pete Peterson Foundation. We're also, though, extremely fortunate that we have as an acting Comptroller General Gene Dodaro, who is a lifelong GAO person. He's been a leader of the organization for many, many years. He was a chief operating officer under Dave Walker. We have a strategic plan in place. We have a set of annual performance goals in place. And for us, it's full speed ahead on our initiatives.
Given that this is an election year, could you tell us what GAO's role and responsibilities are during a government that's in transition? Specifically, what role does GAO play in facilitating a smooth transition between administrations, and what kind of plans do you have in place this time around to assist during the transition?
This, as you know, is just a very important political transition. I mean, they're all important, obviously, but this is going to be the first presidential transition that we've had, obviously, in a post 9/11 environment since the creation of Department of Homeland Security. It's the first presidential transition in over 40 years where the nation has been at war. So there's a whole series of extra sensitivities in making sure that we have successful handoffs of power. We need to keep in mind that the terrorist attacks in Madrid, the Glasgow bombings were all done during times of presidential transitions. The terrorists understand that those are typically times of vulnerabilities for democracies. Our particular role in this is been established in the Presidential Transition Act, and that is to be available and to provide briefings to transition teams. Mm-hmm. We also, though, understand that we have a broader responsibility to help the Congress prepare for the new Congress and to help the Congress prepare for its oversight and decision-making that it will need in conjunction with the new administration. Specifically, what that means is that we're now going through and pulling together through our wide body of work. We issue over 1,000 reports a year in GAO, and no transition need fear. We're not going to be delivering 1,000 reports to them, but we're going through the wide body of work that we've issued and identifying what are those key programmatic and management issues on an agency-by-agency basis that we need to be able to get to transition team in the new administration when they come on. What are the key open recommendations that we have that need additional action? You know, what are the key vulnerabilities based on our work that they may face when they take office on day one? And we're making sure that we package that in a way that's digestible and usable to a transition team, which, as everyone that's been through those tells us, is just going to be inundated with information. Much of this information will be provided in a web-based environment to them. We'll also have a series of one-pagers or shorter things and obviously offer the briefings to them. And then make sure that we're also, as part of that, supporting the Congress, as I mentioned, as you know, since we are a congressional agency, making sure we're supporting the Congress in its oversight, in its authorization appropriations decisions as it moves forward with the new administration.
Within government, we're seeing an increase in the multi-sector workforce, which is public and private sector and nonprofits and all. And it's marked by a mix of contract as well as government employees. What kinds of changes, like in the size or the competencies or the hiring process, should be made to more effectively manage a multi-sector workforce?
Well, the first thing that needs to take place is that we need to make sure that we understand that the delivery of public programs, in many cases, the federal contribution, the number of feds, the FTEs, full-time equivalents, as it were, may actually be a small or even the smallest part of what's involved in the service delivery on that. And so one of the things we need to make sure of is that we maintain a sense of transparency over all the various partnerships and contractors that are involved in the delivery of public services. The second thing, in terms of the size and competencies and in the hiring process, is that for federal employees, it puts an increasing premium on skills in collaboration, in communication, in negotiation, in working across various sectors. The old hierarchical models of being able to tell someone below you that you want something done and then having faith that that will be done are really breaking down. You know, the skill to success now, what leadership is now, is being able to get work done through others who don't work for you. So skills and collaboration are needed. The 30-year model is of coming in, you know, right out of graduate school or right out of college and then retiring 30, 35 years later. That's not the predominant way that young people today, or not just young people, many people think about public service. We need to make sure our organizations are agile enough in order to respond to the market demands.
Well, following on that and looking internally inside GAO, would you tell us about GAO's recruitment and retention efforts? You've got programs like the Student Intern Program and the Executive Exchange Program. How do they factor into your recruitment and retention strategies, and what other kinds of initiatives are you pursuing in this area?
We focus on 50 or more major graduate programs in the U.S. and it, for our analyst, which is our predominant professional category. First, we assign individual senior executives responsibility for establishing relationships with people on those universities. It is made very clear to us that this is not just something they'd like us to do or other duties as assigned. This is a core part of our responsibility and a core accountability for us. Is to establish these types of relationships. So we invest recruiting efforts within line managers as a key part of their responsibility. The second, and directly related to that, is that it's not just a responsibility is not to develop recruiting relationships, but college relations relationships. And so the when I go to a university, very few of those visits, very few of the little of the time that I spend up there is on actual hard recruiting. Most often it's about talking about GAO. And so it's kind of branding the organization that way. To what extent are agencies offering themselves up and saying, hey, we can offer you a speaker, or we've done some stuff that, you know, issued some reports that may be of interest to you. That's how you brand the organization and get the competitive advantage. In terms of the specifics of what you were asking about on the intern program, a successful GAO internship is really the predominant way of getting a full-time offer into GAO. We view it as just a great opportunity for us to get to know and see people that would that we think could be good possibly for full-time employment. We just find it to be an absolutely wonderful device to be bringing people in. The executive exchange program is actually used less, and it was designed to be used less. What this was designed to do is to bring in or offer an opportunity for top talent from the outside, where we have a critical skills gap on a particular set, a particular project or initiative, to have them come in, spend some time in educating and working with us so that we can get to value from them, while at the same time, you know, hopefully giving them a deeper appreciation of kind of life inside government. I mean, it's been used, as I said, by design to a much more limited extent, but, you know, to the extent we have had the opportunity to use it, it's been very successful.
Well, with your background and expertise, could you outline some of the critical best practices involved in leadership development and cultivating future leaders within federal government or public sector more broadly?
The single most important thing in leadership development is making sure, and it's the onus on this ought to fall on the individual, is making sure that they identify good mentoring relationships and people that they can look to and consult with and that can give them the good advice and tell them when they're doing well, but also be willing to say, hey, you know, you're a little bit off track here, or I think your judgment was, you know, you didn't handle this exactly right. To make sure that you have those people throughout their career. And it doesn't have to be a very formal type of mentoring devices. And yet I have found just incredible value from those types of relationships. I think that's the most important type of leadership development that we can have. The other type of, you know, of kind of more formal things that we found very important is certainly putting people in positions where they'll have an opportunity to stretch, to really go in new directions, to test or try and develop skills that they may not have had before. So that's something that we do explicitly, certainly at all levels, but at, you know, of leadership development, but explicitly as part of the SES Candidate Development Program.
What does the future hold for GAO? We will ask Chris Mim, Managing Director of Strategic Issues at the Government Accountability Office, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.